How's it going, everybody? And welcome to a very special episode of Troy Talk. We have a jam-packed episode on tap for us today, and we return our guests from last time after a spectacular rookie performance. The Lincoln Riley news took us by surprise, but we've been talking about the head coaching search for a while now, so it's about time that we did a podcast about it. We will tell you what we know and how it went down, or what we know about how it went down, who we thought was going to be hired, the implications of the hire, like recruiting, coaching, all that stuff. And then we'll finish out with the episode with a quick recap of the USC basketball team if we have time. And if not, we can maybe save that for another episode. But without further ado, let's get started. Welcome, guys. How's everybody doing?
Man, couldn't be better, honestly. With the, after that Sunday's news, it's just like I'm excited all around.
Yeah, doing pretty well. The Lakers won last night and in a blowout fashion, which hasn't happened all season, so very excited right now.
Yeah, I heard the key is to just not play DeAndre Jordan and the Lakers play well. So
who knew it was that easy, right?
Yeah, who knew? Who knew? But yeah, like Rob was saying, like it felt like like Christmas morning when I was a kid, honestly. Like there was just so much to unpack and like so much excitement. And it's been a while since we've been able to feel that way, I think, regarding the USC program. So that was a nice, refreshing experience. But the P was blowing up. And by the way, I'll give a quick free advertisement. That's where I get most of my information. Quick disclaimer, the Peristyle. So if you want to sign up, I think the deal just ended, but it's, you know, well worth its money. And they do a good job over there, especially GM with his recruiting. I know he's going to be busy, busy the next couple weeks, and it's going to be a fun time for recruiting. So definitely check that out if you can. So I guess we could just start with our initial impressions of the hire. We could start with Rob, what you're thinking of the hire.
Just absolute shock. Like I had to make sure like that the person who posted it wasn't like, you know, one of those parody accounts like Bruce Fieldman or, you know, one of those where like they switch one letter. I was like, there's no way this is actually real. And yeah, so for me, initial shock. And just obviously after that, I'm like, okay, it's real. Like absolute excitement. Like, oh, now we actually care about football.
And then Mike.
Yeah, likewise. I had kind of I hadn't been following as closely as most of you guys, but you know, whoever you guys are excited about, you know, I tag along. So it's been a roller coaster of, you know, going from the three coaches that you mentioned, right? From Aranda to what's that guy's name?
Campbell.
Matt Campbell, and then of all people, Lincoln Riley was the one that actually, you know, that we ended up going with. So just it's been a roller coaster, but I was very excited. I didn't even think that was a possibility. So
no, that's exactly right. I mean, it's a grand slam hire no matter how you look at it. He's shown that he can win at the highest level, although, you know, he hasn't got the national championship yet, but he's been to the playoffs I think 3 out of the last 5 years, which is pretty impressive in its own right. I know the Big 12 isn't really the SEC, but it's still a good conference, definitely better than the Pac-12. So if he can do it in the Big 12, I think there's no way he's not going to do it in the Pac-12. It's much easier. I mean, we basically only have, you know, Oregon, Utah, and I mean, not even Stanford anymore. So it's a pretty, you know, non-competitive conference. But I think that we're going to be seeing some good football for the first time in a long time. And we actually finally have a coach who knows what he's doing. He has a philosophy. He has something that he kind of preaches and he brings in. He shows it on the field. He's an offensive guru. A lot of people are calling him like the Sean McVay of college football with his innovations. I mean, I was watching just some YouTube videos of the different, you know, different plays and kind of like the film breakdown of them. And it's just so much creativity that we've never had before. It's not just, you know, like a simple air raid where it's just like make it simple for the players. It's like there's legit, you know, like nuance to the plays. And I think that's something that, you know, with all the skill players we've had over the years, I don't think we've ever fully utilized them. I mean, Drake London this year, I guess you could argue, but we were basically just force feeding him the ball and letting him do what he does best. So now we actually have people or have plays to get people open. And I think that's going to be awesome. Like it's something that, you know, I don't think I've seen a receiver be wide open in a long time in USC football. So looking forward to see how he does, you know, regarding his philosophy. So we can discuss a little bit about the progression. I mean, so last episode we talked that Aranda was most of our favorites. And then that was the favorite of the Peristyle at the time. But we can kind of talk about the progression. It was basically looking like it was Matt Campbell up until the final hour. Like all of last week, there were talks, there were, you know, agreements agreed upon, and all of a sudden, the last second, Lincoln Riley, I guess, apparently asked Oklahoma to match the offer from LSU that LSU offered him. They said no, and then I guess the agent of, I forgot who it was. I guess the agent of Lincoln Riley.
Dante Williams.
Right, Dante. Yeah, so the same. They have the same agent. And he's like, I think I can get that deal for you from USC if you're interested. And he said, yeah, let's go for it. And USC, credit to Brandon Sosna and Mike Bone. I mean, they really took the initiative and just sent it. And they gave him a lot of money. They gave him a lot of control, and they really committed to changing the program. And that's something, you know, we didn't have with Pat Hayden or Lynn Swann, maybe not since Mike Garrett. So it's something that's, you know, unique and not what we're used to seeing. Kind of the big boys have the power now, and they're committed to winning. And that's great to see, because we're all fans of USC, and committing to winning is the only way we're going to be at that elite level like we used to be.
So in an indirect manner, another recruiting win for Dante.
Yeah, exactly. Dante's just the elite recruiter. He gets his guys. But we'll see if he even, you know, stays on. I'm not sure. We'll talk about maybe the drama that happened today later. I don't know fully what happened, and I'm not even sure anybody knows fully what happened except for maybe the players. So we can talk a little bit about that when we talk about the coaching. But I think either way, whatever happened, if we got Matt Campbell, I would have been happy. I think Matt Campbell is a great coach, and I think we would have done well with him. It was a little bit different philosophy than Lincoln Riley. I think Matt Campbell is more of a defensive guy. Although his offenses are pretty good. I mean, at Iowa State, you have Brock Purdy and Breece Hall are both going to be probably NFL players. So they know how to run the ball, they know how to pass the ball, and they know how to beat good teams. Especially it being Iowa State, which is literally as far away from a recruiting hotbed as you could possibly get in Ames, Iowa. Like, the fact that he was able to beat the big boys with those rosters shows that he knows how to coach football, which is all I really wanted in our coach, was someone who knows how to coach football. After having the last 5 to 6 years with Clay, who obviously did not know how to coach football, it's just a nice change. It's a welcome change. But I don't know if you guys had any other comments on that.
Yeah, like from all I hear and just from taking it big picture, you know, the guy beat Oregon in the Fiesta Bowl, was it 2 years ago? And mm-hmm. It's just like doing that at a place like Iowa State. If I went through, like, you know, their record year by year, and it's like, that was probably their crown achievement, you know? So that it's crazy to be winning at a place like that. And just to, it would have been fine, you know, like we get someone like an adult in charge who actually knows football and knows how to coach. So it would have been okay. So, but obviously, you know, what we landed was way more than I even thought was possible.
Yeah, agreed. Any other comments, Mike?
No, I agree with both of you guys.
All right, that's good. So what exactly, I would say, what do you excites you most about this hire? Is it the recruiting? Is it the new offense that he's bringing? Is it the coaching that he's bringing? Or just the fact that we hired somebody of that caliber?
The culture. It's just like, to mm-hmm. me, this shows like we care about football. These last couple of years, I'm like, do we even care about sports anymore? Like, about football? It's just like,
basketball school. Here?
Exactly. Exactly. So I'm just like, okay, you know, like I'd go out to, I still go out to every game. I can't help it, but it's just like the product itself. I didn't look forward to it. You know, all these, it used to be like my Saturdays were USC football, and they had taken the fun out of it. And just, I'm just looking forward to that because I know what Lincoln Riley entails. Like he's serious. You know, he's already got California recruiting on mm-hmm. lockdown from when he's on Oklahoma, and I would expect that to continue from what we've seen so far.
Yeah, what about you, Mike?
Yeah, likewise. For me, the progression went from originally, you know, we were going to go with Aranda, right? Who's having a great year. Is it Rondo or Aranda?
Aranda, I think.
Aranda, okay, yeah. Who's having a great year, but he, is, you know, this is his second year, right? His first year is somewhat uneven.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to Matt Campbell, who's he's won what, two Big 12 coaches of the years.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, I think they've won the conference like two or three times since he's been the head coach, you know, so wait, is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, or at least their division. I think Big 12 has, I don't know how many teams they have nowadays, but like,
Oklahoma typically wins Big 12 the conference. So right. Yeah, at least their division, but you know, but he hasn't had a great year, but you know, in general, he's had a lot of success. And then going from that to Lincoln Riley, you know, which is nuts because talking about being accomplished, you know, like, and having a track record, you know, he's way more than any, you know, like, obviously Campbell or Rando. So it's just, I feel like in general, even, you know, with, you know, our hires of, say, Andy Enfield, right? He was a guy who had a great, like, March tournament, mm-hmm. run, but he wasn't necessarily like a, like, he didn't have a track record of success the same way Lincoln Riley did. So it's probably the biggest, like, home run hire in a major sport since we've been at USC. And, the most, like, sure thing that we've had in a while. So
it's very exciting. I agree. And I think there's two other things that I'll mention really quickly. One, you don't see coaches like that go from power program to power program very often. Like, especially directly from, like, Oklahoma to USC. I think Nick Saban went LSU to the NFL back to Bama, which I guess is pretty close. And then Urban Meyer did the Florida retirement and then Ohio State. And I think the closest you could probably say is probably Jimbo Fisher going from Florida State to Texas A&M. And I'm not sure I call Texas A&M on the level of, like, a blue blood. But, I mean, they're still a good football school. So you don't really see that very often. So I think it took everybody by surprise, not only just USC fans, but, like, this is literally a college football landscape changing hire. And I think people will start to realize that a little bit more when they actually see the results on the field. But just, like, all the potential that's there is just ridiculous. And then secondly – oh, yeah, go for it.
Sorry, and even the Jimbo Fisher thing, it was, like, after a down year, he went, like, 5-6 or something like that. And so, like, obviously he's still Jimbo Fisher, but it's just, like, one down year and, like, Lincoln Riley was just like a play away from going to the Big 12 championship and then maybe making some noise to potentially, I don't think they would have made it, but to get into the college football playoff. Like, if Caleb Williams makes that last, or like that something, we're like one bounce away from maybe we're not here.
No, for sure. That's a great point. The Jimbo Fisher thing, like he had won a national championship, I think, a couple years before, but he did have a down year. So it wasn't like going from a 10-2 team. And actually, this time it's a 10-2 team to a 4-7 team. So it's completely different. And then the second thing I was going to say is USC doesn't really have a track record, despite all their success, of hiring elite coaches. I mean, Pete Carroll was not an elite coach. He was a mediocre NFL coach. It happened to work out. I think he was their third or fourth choice when they decided to hire him. I mean, and then we had, Lane Kiffin, who, again, really didn't have any proven track record as a head coach. Steve Sarkisian, same thing. And then, obviously, you know, the king of unproven track records, learning on the job, Clay Helton. So hasn't really been an elite hire in a long time. And I don't even know, I guess John Robinson back in the day, but I don't even know his past before USC hired him. So I don't even know if he was, like, a great USC coach or an NFL coach or something like that. So we've kind of just, I think, lucked into good coaches in the past, but this time we actually went out and got someone, you know, who's shown that they can do it at the highest level. So that's just exciting to me.
Agreed.
So we can transition a little bit to another thing I'm excited about, the coaching. It's going to be a lot of new coaches coming in. And I think the biggest one that we can talk about first is the offensive line coach at Oklahoma. I think the name's Bill Biedenbaugh or something. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but he has Bedenbaugh. Is that how you pronounce
Bedenbaugh?
It?
I think.
Oh, Bedenbaugh. Okay. Well, yeah. Coach B. We'll call him Coach B. But anyways, he's an elite offensive line coach in the power running scheme that Lincoln Riley runs, and they've produced, you know, countless good backs out of that system. Trey Sermon, I think, was initially there, and then transferred to Ohio State. He's in the NFL now. Ramondre Stevenson's in the NFL now. So, like, he has a track record of producing those players, and I think if we can get players like Keontae Ingram, who I think showed a lot of good glimpses this year in that kind of offense, we're going to be getting back to that running style. And then we already have the elite quarterbacks who can sling the rock. So the actual balance that we can achieve in a like successful way, unlike like the Clay Helton gumbo where we just wanted to run it 20 times, pass it 20 times, even though it wasn't successful, I'm looking really forward to that. And then a couple other coaches. I think what the inside receivers coach is coming over, and I guess he's a great recruiter.
Dennis Simmons.
Simmons. Like that guy's huge, by the way, for an inside receivers coach. He's coming over, and I think there's a couple like support staff, but like director of ops is coming over, strength coach is coming over, and then possibly like their outside linebackers/quarterback coach is coming over. So there's gonna be a lot of transition, I think, from Oklahoma. And we definitely need to upgrade. Oh, then Alex Grinch, how could I forget? That's like the main one. The defensive coordinator who's going to be coming over and replacing Todd Orlando. But yeah, what are your thoughts on the guys, the new coaches that are coming in?
I can't say I know too much about them. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't really follow. All I know is everything I keep hearing about Coach B is that we have to get him. He has to be on staff. He's a great recruiter, well respected for his position. So that would be about the only one I've heard. And then obviously Simmons too, actually. So those two are like the ones that I keep hearing that we have to have on staff. And Simmons is already confirmed. I believe Coach B should be getting confirmed shortly. And that's a huge position in need. So like as much as I want, obviously we'd love to land Damani Jackson. I really hope we do. It's mm-hmm. the offensive line where we've kind of suffered these last couple of years, and a hire like that could really flip things around, especially with some important offensive tackle prospects still waiting to commit. I believe like Connerly, or we could talk mm-hmm. about that, but yeah, just really, really hope we get that offensive line coach.
Yeah, just to shed some light on Alex Grinch, by the way, he was a defensive coordinator for Washington State, actually, with Mike Leach, and he actually had a top 25 defense when he was there, so that's why he was kind of a hot commodity. I think he then went to Ohio State and then to Oklahoma. He hasn't been, like, elite at Oklahoma, and I'm not really sure why. I don't know if it's the personnel he had, if he changed up his system, different than what he was at Washington State, but he's definitely an upgrade, and hopefully... I mean, I don't think we need an elite defense right away to win in the Pac-12. Like, I think the offense is good enough, and just having an average to above average defensive coordinator should be good enough. And if that isn't working, then I think Lincoln Riley's not afraid to make a change. So, I mean, that's for the future. Honestly, anything's better than this year. We're giving up like literally 30 plus points a game, and UCLA dropped 60 on us. So it can't get any worse than it has been this year.
I saw our defense gave up like the offensive player of the week like 8 times. I'm just like, damn,
that's rough. Yeah, that's like one of the biggest like disses you could possibly get. Like, that's brutal. Okay, all right, we can transition to, like, so what are you guys' expectations? Like, do you expect a Pac-12 championship right away? Do you expect being in the playoff picture right away next year? Do you think it's going to take 2 years? Like, what are you guys thinking?
There's still a lot of roster turnover as far as like offensive line that mm-hmm. I don't think even the best play calling could mask. You know, mm-hmm. he could get there. So not college football playoff, but I would definitely expect us to still win the South and go to the Pac-12 championship and potentially win it.
Right, you, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, this past year I was told that going 10-2. Basically a sure thing, so
that's true. You know, like,
I felt a little lied to. Obviously we didn't even come close to that, so I'm tampering my expectations a little bit. I still think that we should, you know, we're USC, we should always at least compete for the South Pac-12 mm-hmm. South title, right? That should be, you know, the what we should always get. Mm-hmm. That's like not even a question. And and in the past year, obviously it's been Utah that's primarily taken that spot. But yeah, I think we should compete for that, and you know, anything more, it would just be a bonus.
Yeah, I agree. Pac-12 South is definitely realistic for next year, and honestly, just with how weak the Pac-12 is in general, like, I mean, Oregon isn't that impressive. I never thought they're impressive. I think Cristobal talks a big game and really doesn't show it on the field, even though like they go 10-2. It's just not really an impressive 10-2. Although they did beat Ohio State this year, so I'll give them some credit at the horseshoe. So that's pretty impressive. But who knows if he's even there next year? Cristobal could very well leave for Miami. That's kind of been the hot rumor. Utah is always just kind of dangerous with Kyle Whittingham. They definitely exceeded expectations this past year. I don't think anybody expected them to be this good. Washington has a new coach, the Fresno State coach, and they brought back the Fresno State quarterback, who's pretty good this year. He actually transferred from Washington to Fresno State, and now he's Fresno State to Washington, which that doesn't happen too often. That's like a Brew McCoy kind of thing.
Was it Jay Kaner, or what's his name?
Yeah, Jay Kaner, yeah.
Oh, he's gone?
Yeah, he transferred to Washington.
Oh, man. Yeah, I saw his heroic performance against UCLA. That was fun to watch.
Yeah, he's a gamer. He's like a little Drew Brees or something. He just like like a little like 5'11 dude who just slings the rock. He's really fun to watch. But yeah, as I was saying, Pac-12 is just not strong. So if we hit the portal really hard and get the recruits that we're going to talk about later, the Pac-12 should be an attainable goal next year. I know that sounds crazy, but I think all we need is just a little bit of structure and a little bit of like philosophy and a goal to work towards, and Lincoln Riley will make it happen. I think where I'm gonna, you know, not I'm gonna tamper expectations for is or temper expectations for is the playoffs and like the championship. So obviously I want to compete for that, but Lincoln Riley still has to prove that he can win a national championship. He hasn't done that, and he has, you know, I don't want to say crumbled in the playoffs, but like he hasn't been able to beat the elite teams in the playoffs, and that is something that we need to be aware of and be cognizant of and just be realistic about. Like I think he has a little bit more resources now. He can recruit California, and Sosna and Bone have really given him a lot of control and resources to make the program what he wants to make it. I know at Oklahoma, it wasn't always like that. He didn't always have like the best relationship and have everything that he wanted. And I think now he has carte blanche. Like he has everything that he could possibly want, promised to him. So it's kind of up to him to make it happen now. He's given the reins, and I'm excited to see where it takes him. Okay, so that's actually a perfect segue. I just got a notification. Relique Brown decommitted from Oklahoma. So I know that wasn't surprising, but that's good because that means he's going to commit to USC probably.
Yeah. Oh, that's what his countdown thing was about. He had posted a countdown on Instagram.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, that's been the dude that, I mean, we can just start with him. There are so many of these recruits that are USC fans growing up, and USC was like in the lead for early on, and they just crumbled because of, you know, for whatever reason, losing Clay Helton, whatever it may be, just the direction the program was going. I think a lot of the guys just realized that staying home was not going to give them the best chance of developing, you know, getting them to the next level. So we can start with Relique Brown. He is a 5'10, I don't know, 200 pound running back out of Modern Day. Definitely more of the shifty type. For those who haven't seen his film, I watched a little bit of it, and I mean, I don't like comparing anybody to Reggie Bush because that's just undue expectations on somebody. But he does have that cutting ability. It's pretty cool to watch someone who's can kind of reverse field like that. I don't think we've had that at USC in a long time. I can't even remember the last person who could have that elite quickness at the running back position. So they were actually recruiting him a little bit at slot receiver too at Oklahoma. So I think Lincoln will find if he does end up committing, he will find a usage for him to get the most out of him. Those kinds of players should be staying home, right? He's an elite running back at Modern Day. That should be a given every single time that he goes to USC. So hopefully Lincoln Riley can kind of continue with getting those types of players. Do you guys have any thoughts on Relique Brown or any questions?
As much too as, you know, we'd love to have him as a player, the symbolism behind it too, like opening up the pipeline back to Modern Day, that should always be like a, you know, a given. And these past years, it really hasn't been. So, you know, that would kind of hopefully also would help out with potentially getting a few other ones that we'll discuss too, a few other Modern Day players this year and, you know, the years to come.
Yeah. Like you said, the symbolism, you'll see a lot of these players, I think, are going to be sending a message that USC's back and that Oregon's not going to be able to poach these people. Oklahoma's not going to be able to poach these people. And that's important because they were walking all over us. And that's, I mean, unacceptable from a USC's perspective. Okay. Mike, how about you just like, since, you know, you don't follow his recruiting as much, do you want to just like pick someone and we can talk about him?
Yeah. I mean, wow, I'm looking at the list of decommits we've had.
It's sad. Oh, yeah, it's sad.
We've had, what, 12 decommits? We only have 5 commits right now. And, oh, that includes Jaden Gold, who just decommitted today, right?
Yeah.
So that means we have 3 guys committed right now, or 4 guys, and one of them is a punter from Australia.
That's the only one I care to keep, to be honest with you. Maybe Fabian Ross too, but those two are the only ones that I think are worth keeping.
Yeah, I mean, who, like, obviously Demaryius Jackson's a big target for us. I know, Troy, you mentioned that you think of him as like a more raw player, right? You don't necessarily think that he's like a day one starter, right? In the mold of like Eli Ricks or anything like that, right?
Yeah, exactly. Some are even saying he's like a safety at heart. You know, they were saying that a lot about, you know, Biggie Marshall, Chris Steele coming in. He's definitely a raw athlete. I mean, his track times are ridiculous for someone who just started running track. I think he runs in the low 10s in the 100 meter. So he just has that raw ability. He needs to be coached up for sure. But I think like with those players, you always want to take a shot with them, even if they aren't ready right away, because in theory, you would have coaches that can develop them. And by getting them, it keeps them away from your competition. So I think that's kind of like the dual aspect of that. Do you have any other thoughts on Domani, Rob?
Yeah, that'd be a huge get, as you mentioned. No, regardless of, you know, if he's right away ready to come, it's just the message it sends, you know. Get being able to land the elite modern day, you know, blue chip prospect, just him and Relic at the same time. Like, I thought this like recruiting class was done. Like, I had nothing to look forward to this early signing day, and now I'm gonna be on just constantly refreshing the page.
Yeah, and for those at home who don't really follow recruiting, he released his top two, which is kind of surprising. I think it was yesterday he released it. It's between USC and Bama, and I know for a lot of people, if it's between USC and Bama, Bama usually wins that that battle. But, you know, now with Lincoln Riley, and if Dante stays, that'll help. I mean, that remains to be seen. But, I mean, we're in the final two. He's a hometown kid. He was once committed to USC. So we still do have a good shot. I know he really likes Bama. He was really impressed with his visit there, and he loves the facility. So it's going to be tough. And I still don't think we lead right now. But we have some ground to make up, and I think we can do it.
I actually think that if he was going to commit to Bama, he would have done so already. Mm. You know, nothing's going to change with the program, right? Like, he knows what he's getting from them, right? Whereas I think with USC, like, I think he's trying to give us a shot. Or that's how I'm reading it, right? Because, yeah, you know, with Bama, you know what's going to happen there, right? Like, you know Nick Saban's going to be at the helm. So, if he wanted to go to Bama, like, he would have already done so. So, it's somewhat of a good sign that, you know, he's still holding out.
No, I think that's a great point. And another thing is, I think with a lot of these SoCal kids now, I don't want to say like committing to USC is the cool thing now with Lincoln Riley, but like I can imagine some of them being hesitant to go out of state now just because they feel like they're going to miss out. They have a lot of friends here that are going to USC. It's exciting. It's cool to go to USC again. So if he goes to Bama and he struggles even a little bit, I mean, I don't think anybody would be shocked he transfers back to USC, you know? Like, that's like the total kind of Brew McCoy thing. Like, he went to Texas, realized, you know, the grass wasn't always greener. He came back to USC. And in my opinion, Brew would have done really well had he been able to stay on the field. So I think that you'll see a lot of kids, you know, reconsider USC now that should have been considering them and committing to them, you know, as it is.
That in-home visit's going to have a lot more weight now when you have Lincoln mm-hmm. Riley there, as opposed to, you know, like, Clay shows up at your door, and it's like, does that really, sell you on anything?
That would convince me not to go to USC, to be honest with you. But yeah, another good point with the in-home visits. You can now, with the new coach, these players, if they've already taken an official visit to USC, they can take another official visit for early signing day. So they're working to get a lot of those guys that have already come and visit. I think they had a lot of them in June come back before early signing day. So USC official visits are literally the only thing that have been keeping them in most recruits and getting them to sign most recruits. I mean, Gavin Morris and the crew does a great job on those, and it usually sells people. And, you know, I was telling you guys that, like, when I do these interviews for medical school or for residency, when you come off of the interview, you picture yourself there, and you can, like, really, like, wow, I can see myself there. So, like, it makes a huge difference when you do those and you have good interviews. And you might have had prior, you know, conception of where you're going or where you were interested, but if a program really blows you away and, you know, shows that you can develop, like, that's becomes immediately enticing, and you can start imagining yourself there and imagine yourself develop, and it's exciting. I mean, like, I know mine's probably boring compared to these guys. These guys are like the rock stars of college football and the future of that, but like, mine's just residency, which is gonna be 3 years of tough medical work, but it's the same concept.
Wait, I have two questions for you guys. So, mm-hmm. talking about players who went out of state, right? Mm-hmm. and you know, like, that didn't necessarily have the time of their lives and are looking to transfer back. What do you guys think about the chances we have for Eli Ricks? Because he's in the transfer portal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, has there been any rumors, or do you guys have any read on, you know, like, where he thinks, if, you know, we have to be in the running for him, right?
Yeah. Rob, you want to take that away?
I haven't seen too much. So now with all of the, you know, culture shift and everything that we're finally hopefully going to be getting back, it feels like he should give us a good chance. We're in the top, I'd say, top four.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing is that he's not an offensive player. So if it was like, you know, a wide receiver that had gone out of state, you know, whole family moved out to Louisiana, I would have been like, yeah, this is it. You know, like 100%. I do give us a really good chance, but I haven't heard, like, you know, that same concrete like I've seen with some of these other ones.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would say we're in his top three or four. I think it's going to come down to Ohio State. I forgot the other one. Maybe Alabama. But we're definitely in the top three. He's a hometown kid. He also went to Modern Day, an elite defensive back coming out 3 years or so ago. He actually transferred to IMG for, I think, his senior year. But, I mean, the kid is a stud. Both of his parents went to USC too, which is going to help. They've always loved USC, and I think he definitely wanted to go to USC. And maybe if Dante was there, because I don't think he was there when Eli signed with LSU. I think he signed mostly because of Ed Orgeron at LSU. So I don't think he was there. So I think he might have signed with USC if Dante was there, because he does have a good relationship with him. But if we can get him, he's an instant plug-and-play starter who has first-round potential. And I can't even remember the last time that we had a corner go in the first round. Like, even back in Pete's days, it's been a long time. Like, corner's never really been, unless I'm forgetting somebody.
Adoree.
Like, a strong suit. Oh, yeah, Adoree. Duh.
Adoree was the first rounder.
Like, Adoree was, like, everything, though. Like, I consider him just an all-around athlete, like, because of kicker turns, receiving. But I think Adoree was a first rounder in spite of the coaching at USC. I don't think it was because of the coaching. So it was his raw athleticism, his speed, his, you know, just ability to impact the game on many different aspects. So that's, thank you for catching me. Other than that, though, I can't really remember any. Did you have another person you were going to ask about, Mike?
Any transfers? I did, and I completely forgot.
No worries.
All right.
We can scroll through here. If anybody kind of piques your eye, feel free, and we can talk about them. Okay. I mean, I guess we could talk about the Los Al boys. Like, that's kind of been the big thing as of late. They're 2023 recruits. Malachi Nelson, quarterback, who's the number two recruit in the nation for the 2023 class, behind Arch Manning, the yeah, nephew of Eli and Peyton, who you know, was recently shown on Instagram to I think he was hanging out on a visit or something with some sorority girl, and he said he was committing to Ole Miss. So I don't know if that's legit or not, but he did say it. It's on video. He said hottie toddy.
he was coerced.
Yeah, definitely coerced. He definitely felt guilted into doing that. But yeah, I was watching some film on him, and it's mad impressive how that guy throws the football. He's not really a dual threat. Like, he can run. He's not like a statue or anything like that, but his release is so quick, and his accuracy and the ball that he throws. One thing I will say about Jackson Dart, and, you know, he's obviously not healthy, and he's more of a gamer, kind of a raw Brett Favre kind of player, but he doesn't exactly throw a pretty ball. A lot of the balls I see him throw are kind of wobbly. He gets the job done. Like, the receiver still should catch it. But this guy, Nelson, he throws a perfect spiral with perfect touch. It's like if you crafted a, you know, a player out of like a factory. Like, this is exactly what you would want in a quarterback. He does it all. And fits perfectly, I think, in Rink and Riley's system. I know he uses a lot of dual threats, but I think with just like the deep shots that Lincoln Riley likes to take, he's perfect for it. You guys have any thoughts on him or questions?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Lincoln Riley is known as the quarterback whisperer, right? And I was reading this article in The Athletic, and then they mentioned that I think a lot of the appeal with working with Lincoln Riley is that, you know, in back-to-back years, you had, what, Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray,
Jalen Hurts, the GOAT.
Yeah, and then Jalen Hurts, very, very different quarterbacks. You know, and he was able to adjust the system to fit all of them, right? Which is like, as a quarterback, that's exactly what you want to see, right? A coach that could tailor the game plan to your strengths. And I feel like that has to be one of our biggest selling points, like that to any quarterback, really, right? Is that we have a coach that can do what it takes to make you succeed.
No, 100%. And two of them won the Heisman, too. I mean, right? Baker and Kyler both won the Heisman.
Hurts was a runner, yes. Right?
No, Baker won it.
I think Baker won it.
No, Hurts was a runner.
Oh, Hurts was a runner.
Well, Hurts was a runner up. Yeah. I thought you said Hurts was a runner. I'm like, yeah, I mean, he's a quarterback, too, Mike. Like, Rob's an Eagles fan, for those who don't know. So he's kind of had would you say a love-hate relationship with Jalen Hurts? It's kind of been a roller coaster, much like the USC football program. But right now,
it's
going pretty well.
Yeah, this past weekend wasn't so great, but yeah, I'm still on the bandwagon. I mean, the Jalen Hurts.
Yeah. I've always, you know, been kind of had a soft spot for the Eagles, so it's been fun to see them at least be back to relevant. It's been what, three or four years since the Super Bowl? I can't even remember, but that was kind of fun to see them beat the Patriots. Okay, so we can transition, keeping with the Los Alamitos trifecta. Mekhi Lemon is basically, I like to think of him as like Amon-Ra on like steroids. I think that he's not as good of a route runner. He's not as refined as Amon-Ra, but like similar size, but this guy is explosive. I mean, he catches everything. He can break, you know, a 60-yard pass, punt return, whatever it may be, like on any given day. And he's a 6 foot 180, five-star. I think he's the fourth prospect in the 20 in California, and then like I don't know what he is in the grand scheme of things, like in the United States, but like he is a stud, you know, perennial five star. I don't want to say he's a package deal because I feel like that discounts him as like his own player, but it's basically been known that wherever Nelson goes, Mekhi Lemon is going to go too. And Mekhi Lemon is also really liked USC growing up. I don't remember, was the article that I sent you guys, I don't know if it was Nelson, but like these guys were both big USC fans. They literally said in the article that they hate UCLA or that they like cannot stand UCLA. So I'm like, get these guys on my team. Like I need to see some of that. You know, the Matt Barkley's, Matt Leinart's, those all were big USC guys growing up. Like they hated UCLA and they showed that on the field. They whooped them pretty good most of the time. So we need to get back with those people that kind of have the edge to them. I think Amon-Ra was, you know, a perfect example of that. He was kind of the outlier, I think, in the last 5 years of the dudes that we want at our program, right? Like you didn't see a lot of those guys who just worked really, really hard at what they do, played with that edge, played with 110%, and really like, you know, gave everything. Because I feel like there are some people that just, you know, have been taking it easy just because of Clay's mentality and kind of easy on the players. But he was one who was just kind of, you knew he was going to get his job done and work as hard as he can on every play and on every, you know, time he steps on the field.
Yeah, he was going to be successful wherever he went, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, and I think people were like, oh, if Amon-Ra would have gone somewhere else, he would have been drafted higher. And I'm like, you know, I think that's kind of wrong. Like he was pretty proficient and successful at USC despite everything. Put up pretty good numbers. You know, I had a COVID year too, so like the numbers are going to be deflated a little bit. But like, he was always going to be limited, and we knew that coming in with his speed and his size. Like, he was never going to be the fastest person and never going to be the biggest person, but he was almost always going to be one of the best, like, legitimate receivers on the field. And I think no matter where he would have gone, he would have been drafted in a similar spot. And he's successful in the NFL already. Like, he's already doing great things on a really bad Lions team, like, really, really bad. So he's shown that he can get it done, and he's going to be a great pro. Any other questions on Lemon before we move to somebody else?
Nope.
Cool. So DeAndre Moore is the last guy. He actually was originally a Desert Pines, which is where Michael Jackson, the current USC receiver, went to high school, and it's in Las Vegas. So it's kind of become a factory of pretty good players. It's not too far from where I am right now. And he's a dude. Also not really a big receiver. So as you can kind of see, Lincoln has kind of a type, and it's not the Drake London type. It's the fast receivers that can break big plays. He's 5'11", 190-ish, and also a really high four-star. So he's gonna be a little tougher, I think, to get away from Oklahoma because his primary recruiter, I think, is DeMarco Murray, who is probably staying at Oklahoma and also has a lot of ties in Vegas because I think he went to Bishop Gorman. But either way, he's from Vegas. So, you know, I think he has an allegiance to DeMarco Murray. So may not get him, but the fact that we get, if we get Nelson, I mean, Nelson did commit, and if we get Lemon, who's probably on his way shortly, it's definitely going to help with Moore. I'm not sure if we end up flipping him, but that would be big. And we have a lot of time too, right? Like if we do really well next year, Moore could see the light and decide to switch. He's a 2023 commit as well. So we have some time with him.
Is that I see him listed as LaSalle too.
Yeah, so he transferred from Desert Pines. Yeah, he was originally in Vegas to Los Alamitos. So that's kind of like, I mean, just imagine Malachi Nelson throwing to Makai Lemon and DeAndre Moore. That's just not even fair. Like, that's probably the best group since, like, JT Daniels, Brew McCoy, and all of them. Like, we're in high school at the same time. It's legit. Okay, so we can talk a little bit about some of the players that are committed to other programs right now really quickly. Gentry Williams, just quick, he was super interested in USC, big Dante Williams guy, but committed to Oklahoma, and it's probably going to stay at Oklahoma. We can talk about CJ Williams a little bit, who's a modern-day kid, really good, 6'2", 183, or 193, bigger receiver, definitely the go-up-and-get-it kind of guy, which I think we should have at least one of those guys. It shouldn't be all speed receivers, even though Lincoln Riley's shown that those are probably the best players that he gets into the league. You know, the Marquise Browns, CeeDee Lamb's, not, I mean, CeeDee Lamb's a little taller, but like the smaller receivers, he's definitely had a lot of success with. So CJ Williams is going to be big. He's committed to Notre Dame right now. I think the holdup with him was that he wanted to see, you know, with all the Brian Kelly thing, where the assistant coaches were going to go, because he really wants to play for Tommy Rees. And I forgot who the other coach was. Tommy Rees is the offensive coordinator, and the other coaches, I forgot what it was. But Tommy Rees actually declined LSU today. He said he's staying at Notre Dame, so that might make it a little tougher to get CJ Williams. But CJ Williams has always liked USC, and if Lincoln Riley puts the full court press on him, I think it's realistic that he flips. So that'd be big. And then lastly, to round it out with the other players committed, Tetaroa McMillan. I don't really know how to pronounce his name, but honestly, probably my favorite 2022 receiver, and I think the best 2022 receiver. He's currently committed to Oregon, and I know Mike probably has some comments on that, because I feel like whenever we connect, he's like, why on earth would you go to Oregon if you're a receiver? He's a stud. Like, he not only can go up and get it, but he can make big plays too. Like, he's the full package, and obviously would love to have him. I think he's a big Oregon guy. He's from, like, I think Hawaii originally, or at least he has family there, so he's been a big Marcus Mariota fan. And he has an allegiance to the Oregon Ducks. So, like, he even mentioned that, like, he's a hard commit. Even Lincoln Riley could talked with him, visited him. So it's going to be a little harder for him to flip him, at least.
Those initial comments he made, where he's like, oh, I'm not even going to take a call. I'm like, really? Like, yeah, you at least got to – that to me is like, okay, this guy's a hardcore fan then, if he's not even going to, you know, get Lincoln Riley, your home city. You know, it's just like, I'd at least, you know, see what they have to offer.
Yeah, like, for
especially
sure.
Especially considering what Oregon has been as far as, like, receiving wise, they haven't really been producing at that position.
Yeah, I think they said something like Drake London has more yards and catches and touchdowns than, like, the whole, like, Drake London playing, what, 7 games has more than the whole receiving core combined, or something like, some wild like that. I thought that was pretty funny. I think that's about it for the receivers. We can talk a little bit about the ones that technically aren't flips, but they're uncommitted right now, and players that I think are super important. If you want to go through them, Mike, do you have any questions on anybody in particular? If you wanted to, like, highlight one of them.
I was just going to ask, like, you know, obviously we've talked extensively about, you know, kind of the offensive side of things, right? But what about like defense, right? Because we know that Lincoln Riley basically recruits himself, right? And but at the same time, yeah, I was wondering, like, you know, how are we looking in terms of, like, on O-line, D-line, and like linebackers?
Yeah, I think that's a perfect segue. I think the remaining recruits that we were going to talk about are basically all either defense, like linebackers, or offensive line. Who are you most excited about, Rob, regarding the offensive line? I'm just curious.
I really hope we get that, Josh Connerly out of Seattle. Mm-hmm. He was already giving us a chance, you know, even prior to this. And it looks like did we get him out on an official visit already?
I don't think And if he has, I think they were talking about trying to get him back. So, like, either way, he's going to get a probably a new official visit.
Yeah, that's honestly one of those, like, must-gets. We position a need, start getting the West Coast offensive tackle, you know, not kind of local because he's on the West Coast. And, yeah, that's a must-get. So something like that would really show, you know, we're back to recruiting the O-line.
Yeah, I mean, regarding Connerly, I think two big things with him. I think he's a Michigan lean, but he is from Washington. So taking him away from Washington, who has honestly, I think, produced pretty good on the offensive defensive line the last, 5 or 6 years or so. So getting him away from that kind of not a rival, but definitely competition in the Pac-12. And then also he's like a legit offensive tackle. Like that is what he does. And we haven't had a legit offensive tackle since probably Austin Jackson. And that was kind of an outlier too. Like we've just been struggling on the offensive line the last 5 or 6 years recruiting. So he's definitely, I agree. That's probably one of the persons I would focus on. And then also Ernest Green. He's more of a guard, but he is St. John Bosco. I mean, USC has been recruiting him forever and they were losing a lot of ground on him. I mean, like he was basically out of the running for a while, but I think now with Coach B and Lincoln, he grew up a USC fan, and it's Bosco's a feeder school for the most part, like kind of like modern day, but maybe to a lesser extent. So it's super important to lock down that and keep that pipeline. He's kind of one of those cornerstones. I mean, if we could get like Connerly and Green on that left side of the line, like, you know, protecting the blind side of whoever it is, Malachi Nelson, Jackson Dart, whoever it is, that's like, that's how you set up for the future, both for pass protection and running. You're going to be set up for a good 3 to 4 years, or however long they stay. And then the last one, kind of an outlier, Devin Campbell, someone who is a 5-star. I think they list him as an offensive tackle, but I think I was reading something. He's probably more of a guard. But his family loved USC. I think his mom, if I was recalling reading, she said it was her favorite school. It was USC based off of the visit. And this was during, like, basically the early season. So, like, we still had Clay Helton, and that was her favorite. And he really liked USC, too, and gave them a lot of chance and, you know, gave them a lot of look. I think he's a Texas lean right now, or at least staying in the Midwest, because he's originally from Arlington, Texas. But getting him, especially when he already had that high interest, I think that would be an awesome get. I don't think we're going to get all three of those guys. And honestly, I would just be happy with one of them. But I think the goal should be two. If we can get two of those guys, that sets us up. And we could hit the portal for, you know, filling in gaps here and there.
Yeah, speaking on him, I saw someone tweeted a basketball highlight of him, and that man is a monster. Like, I
can really?
Definitely see him just, yeah, playing guard. I'll forward it to you. It's crazy. That's a big human.
Hey, 6'3", 3'10", and really athletic too. Also smart kid, really prioritizes academics, so that'd be a good guy to get on the field for sure. And then just to switch to the defensive side, there isn't a whole lot of defensive recruits. Just talking, you asked that question, Mike, that like I think Lincoln Riley is going to have a huge impact on. There might be some flips from Oklahoma that we don't know too much about, but the big one that we should be focusing on getting is David Bailey. He's the like kind of the edge linebacker out of modern day, and honestly probably my favorite defensive player in this class, even over Damani. Like, this guy is so good at football. He's built like a tank, like 6'3", 220, like all muscle, really smart player. And he's between Stanford and USC. And after Stanford just like walloped on USC, I think he was at that game. He kind of switched to Stanford, even though Stanford's kind of having a bad year too. That's probably who's in the lead for him right now. But I think if we put the full court press on him, he was a huge USC guy early on. And I think that person would be a great cornerstone for the defensive side of the class. I don't know if you guys have any more to add on him.
I did read he's like the one who's not much on like social media, right? So he's not been like, people don't have like that clear of a read on him.
Yeah, I think they try to contact him and he just doesn't respond.
Yeah,
which is kind of OG. I like that.
The old school yeah. Mentality. Yeah, no, agreed. Exactly, and he's modern day, so that would be a huge get. If we get Domani, him, and Relique Brown out of this class, that'd be nuts. You know, get that pipeline going again.
Yeah, and I think another thing, talking about Damani, I forgot, like, he missed all of this year, basically, with an injury. I forgot the specific injury, but it was enough. I think it might have been meniscus or something, but it was enough for him to miss the whole season. So when you get hurt like that, it does, you know, kind of put it in your mind that, like, what if this happens in the future? You know, where do I want to be at college? And granted, you know, Alabama's probably not a horrible place to be in college, but you know, if he does get hurt at Alabama, he's gonna, like, people get homesick and he probably want to go home, get home, kind of like Brew when he got sick, you know, very similar. So that might give him second thought on staying home with USC, and I can't say I would complain too much. I hope he recovers, though, because I don't want that affecting the speed, because he has, like, generational speed and athleticism. We don't want that to get hampered, regardless of where he goes. Okay, so we can quickly talk about, I mean, we're coming up on the hour mark, and we do want to watch the USC game at 8:30, so we'll probably leave off the basketball for this podcast, because there was so much to cover for football. But just a couple transfers, possibly from Oklahoma. There are three receivers, I think, that are, or at least two, that have entered the portal, Jaden Hasselwood and Theo Weiss, which were both five stars. I think Hasselwood has like 2 years of eligibility. Theo Weiss has two or three or something like that. And then also, I think there was something about Marvin Mims, who's been, I think, honestly, their best receiver, who he might be in the portal soon, or at least he was thinking about it. I think they're going to see who is hired next and see what kind of offense is being run and all that stuff before they make the decision. But those are definitely people we could hit up in the portal, because I don't know about you guys, but like, receiver used to be our strength. And even this year with Drake London, like, the receiver play this year has been pretty bad. And I'm not sure if that's offensive, like, stylistic related, or just not having as good of players as we used to have. But I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts on the receiver position and how important it is to get those dudes for next year?
Yeah, it felt like a few years ago we were really stocked up. Like, oh, we were just going to get the next five-star, like, 2 5-stars every class. And this year, like, you know, there's still some talent in there, but there's not that, like, elite. Like, oh, this guy could potentially be another first-rounder, second-rounder. Mm-hmm. After Drake London leaves right now, I hope, Kyle Ford makes that jump. And we actually, now that we have a real coach, he knows how to utilize him, because I feel like he's got the raw athletic ability. Mm-hmm. But other than that, yeah, it seems pretty barren.
Yeah, Kyle Ford, I feel like he needs more run. Like, every time I've seen him on the field, I don't know why he doesn't get more playing time, because it seems like he catches everything, makes the hard catches, and just a big dude that we could use in the red zone, because we suck in the red zone, like, are awful. So, I mean, you know, the Michael Pittman, Drake London type of mold. I mean, we had what? Michael Pittman, Tyler Bonds, Amon-Ra, and Drake London on the same team at one point, which is a stark contrast from what we have right now. No offense. Gary Bryan, I think, is coming into his own and developing a little bit. And Taj Washington has shown flashes as well, but the consistency has not been there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, even going back to, like, when we were in school, you know, we always had Robert Woods, Marquise Lee, Nelson Aguilar. Like, we had studs, and we had guys that would basically, they would come in and expect to be, you know, like, drafted in the first 2 days. Their respective draft every year, just in the pipeline as always. And I'm just not sure that that's the case right now.
Oh, for sure. I mean, what those four receivers are counting Juju at the end of that. They all went, Nelson was the only first rounder, but Robert Woods and all them, they were all like early second round to, like, you know, 40th overall kind of pick. So, like, we had four receivers in a row drafted really high, and we were producing them at an elite rate. And, you know, was it T. Martin? Was it the offense? Like, who really knows? But it's, you know, it's imperative that we have that kind of talent to be able to use at our disposal, because, I mean, there's no excuse. West Coast may be lacking in offensive linemen and defensive linemen, but it does not lack in receivers and running backs and quarterbacks. So that should never be a problem, and it's been a problem the last 3 years or so. Okay, I mean, so there were a couple, like, listener questions. I think we went over most of it. We talked about offensive line recruiting. We can talk about really quickly before we go, the quarterback situation. What are your guys' thoughts on, like, I mean, there's been some rumors that Caleb Williams transfers. Do you want to see Dart, you know, ride it out? Do you want the competition? What are your thoughts on that?
So from this season, just seeing some film on Dart, like, obviously I'd want Dart. That's our guy and all that. But now that we have a legit coach, I'm like, you know, whoever he goes with, if Williams wants to transfer, I'm cool with whoever Lincoln Riley, that's our guy. Like, I trust him to actually do it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I hope that it's a legit competition, and that's what I think we will get out of Lincoln Riley. So whatever he goes with, I trust it now. It's not second guessing with, you know, like when Darnold should have started over Max Brown at the time. So it's whoever he goes with, there's faith there.
What about you, Mike?
Yeah, agreed. Obviously, you know, it feels good to have a guy that you, you know, recruited from the jump, and then,
mm-hmm.
you know, they make it as a starting quarterback. But, you know, my only hope is that, you know, if we do somehow, we don't even know if we're going to get Caleb Williams, right? But if right. we do that, it's a healthy competition, and they do pick the best quarterback, right? Not just because they promised, kind of like what the Lakers did with Andre Drummond, where they promised him, and then now he has to play. I just, as long as it doesn't, you know, dissolve to that type of situation, then, you know, I'm always, you know, healthy competition is always good, right? And I don't think Dart is someone who is afraid to compete either, right? Because obviously, yeah, you know, him and Miller Moss are not in the same class. So he knew, like, what he was getting into. He knew, you know, Miller Moss is also a premier prospect, right? So I don't think he's someone that shies away from competition. But I just hope that both of them get a fair shake.
So I think my opinion is, and selfishly, I want Dart to be a USC legend. I've been, you know, adamant about that. I think he's what he's shown this year in the face of adversity. Like, he's made USC football at least somewhat watchable this year. Like, I could barely watch when Slovis was quarterback, and although Dart hasn't been like lighting it on fire, I guess you'd say, the last couple games, I think just the way he plays just makes it a lot more fun. And he has that Cali boy swagger, even though he's from Utah, he looks like he's, you know, straight out of like Laguna Beach or something. And like, that's the USC of old, right? Like the Matt Leinarts, Matt Barkley, Carson Palmer, those were all Orange County kids who live and, you know, breathe the USC lifestyle. And it's fun to see them succeed like that. So I want it to be Dart, and I think Dart is perfectly capable of and good enough to succeed in Lincoln Riley's offense, especially when he's healthy. Like, he's obviously not healthy right now with that bulky knee brace, and he was rushed back pretty fast from a meniscus surgery, based on the timeline that I know of, you know, with my, you know, little medical knowledge that I have. But that's a pretty quick timeline. It was like 3 or 4 weeks to be like thrust out there in action is tough. And he's been a gamer. I think he needs to learn how to slide, maybe, you know, refine his mechanics a little bit. But that spirit that he has is what I want out of a USC quarterback. But that being said, if Caleb Williams does transfer and there is healthy competition, I won't be upset. I think Caleb Williams is legitimately like one of the better quarterback prospects in the last like 3 or 4 years. He's that good, like running the football. He's elite passing the football, and like in the Elite 11 camps before he got into college, I think he had one of the best Elite 11 performances ever, based off of like the points or statistics or whatever they did. Like, he won that thing handily. And he showed it this year, honestly. Like, I don't think he's the reason Oklahoma's losing or anything like that this year. Like, he's single-handedly trying to, you know, carry them to victory. And I think doing that as a true freshman after Spencer Rattler kind of took a nosedive, he's shown that he can show up in adversity and show up on the field too. So if he does end up transferring, which is far from a, you know, a guarantee at this point, I think either way we'll be set. And I trust, like, as Rob said, I trust Lincoln Riley, and I think we'll be good with, you know, whatever happens.
Also, just one side note, but I love it when, you know, when people are like, oh, you know, he's the reason that Oklahoma lost. It's like, well, they lost 2 games.
Yeah.
You know, like, if he was the reason, they're not losing that much because of him either. You know, like,
right. Like, they still had a legitimate shot at the playoffs
that we're dealing with right now.
Mm-hmm. And I don't even know, did he lose both the games, or was it the Rattler lose one? I don't even remember. But it's definitely not him. He's not the reason. And I think Lincoln Riley like has some things he needs to change. Like, obviously he's not perfect, and he's lost a couple games this year that he probably should not have lost. I think they lost I don't know if it was like TCU or who it was, and then they lost to Oklahoma State. So like, those are the teams. Baylor, right? Duh, Aranda. That's why everybody was stoked about Aranda. Oh, I think TCU beat Aranda. That's what it was, randomly or something like that. But yeah, it's kind of, you know, the circle of suck that the Pac-12 kind of ends up, you know, just demolishing each other. So I think either way we'll be good. But yeah, I mean, I think that about covers it. I think we covered most of the thing. We covered recruiting. We covered the implications. We covered kind of how it comes about, or how it came about. The Peristyle was just flooded with like insiders, and like waiting on insiders to post, and like what their sources were hearing. And we were hearing a lot of things, and it seemed like it was Matt Campbell, but it ended up being Lincoln Riley. And I think we're all three, and I can speak for all of us, we're all very happy about it. We can quickly just say, like, good job for USC basketball. They really need a podcast for how well they played over the weekend in Anaheim. I mean, that would, like, I know that San Diego State game, if you look at the stats and like all that, it probably doesn't look as good, like the box score, but I was so happy after that game. I thought that was one of our better games in the last like 3 or 4 years, you know, not counting the playoff or the tournament games in the NCAAs. But that was so much fun to watch.
Yeah.
And we got to watch Utah. I think the game just started, so we'll get off pretty soon here. But I just wanted to shout them out because Enfield has them playing at a high level. I think they're buying into that culture. Recruiting's going fantastic. I mean, our recruiting class next year is going to be studs, and we're just going to kind of reload. And I think getting used to being able to reload for USC basketball is kind of nice. I mean, we've kind of not had that for a while, so it's nice to see our program being built in that direction. Do you guys have any last thoughts before we end the podcast?
No.
Just looking forward to early signing day, and it's going to be a lot of news coming up.
Yeah, for sure. December 15th, I believe, is early signing day, so there should be a lot in the next 2 weeks or so. Yeah, anything from you, Mike?
No, I'm good. Yeah, thanks for having us, Troy.
Of course. Yeah, so I was telling in the group chat earlier, I was speaking to like a faculty on interview today, and he said he was going to check out the podcast. So if he does check out the podcast, it was awesome. The interview went great today, and I was really thankful for that, and talking sports with you was really fun. So hope you enjoy if you do end up listening, and hope everybody enjoys. I appreciate everybody that listens to this podcast. This is something we do for fun, just to kind of talk sports, and you know, no matter if it's 30 people, 100 people, 15 people, whoever listens to it, I just really appreciate it, and it's been a fun, you know, to start it back up, and hopefully we can keep continuing. I think we have a lot to talk about in basketball. Maybe we'll get on, you know, every 2 or 3 weeks or so with you guys, and maybe I'll do it a little bit more frequently. I know, because we're all really busy, but I really appreciate you guys coming on, and hope to have you guys back soon.
Absolutely, man. Appreciate the invite always, and it's always nice chatting it up.
All righty. Later on, guys.
All right, have a good one.
You too.